This encore program for Fire on the Earth was chosen based on the request from many listeners.
Fire on the Earth. Our Holy Father has said the Church is missionary by her very nature. The Church exists to evangelize. He's called for a new springtime of evangelization. To help us obtain the tools each of us needs to answer the Church's call, this is Fire on the Earth. Here is our host, Peter Herbeck.
Welcome to Fire on the Earth. This is Peter Herbeck, your host. We're beginning another week of Fire on the Earth, a program dedicated to the promotion of Catholic mission and evangelization. It's my joy and my delight to be able to welcome a very good friend and guest today, Dr. Phil Gigliotti. Dr. Phil is a physician from Cleveland. He's got a fantastic testimony and story of how God has used him and brought him first to the knowledge of the Lord. You know, we just celebrated Epiphany on Sunday, and you know, when the gospel goes to the Gentiles, well, the gospel has gone to this Gentile friend of mine who the Lord has really touched, and he's come to love and know the Lord. And so, welcome, Dr. Phil.
Thanks, Peter. It's great to be here. Yeah. Always great to be in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, you drove all the way up from Cleveland early this morning to be able to come up and do this interview. But I thought it'd be great to just start with your story, your background, and how you came to know the Lord.
Well, that's good. I love telling my testimony. I evangelize people all day long in my office, and I use my testimony, bits and pieces of it here and there.
Yeah,
I have to say I was almost 44 years old when I came to know the Lord. So it wasn't when I was, 16 or 20, and I wasn't a drug addict, or I wasn't a criminal. I wasn't in prison. I was at the top of my game. Mm-hmm. I was happy. I had a great job. I had a great family. I had a nice life. I was going on great vacations once or twice a year. I was just happy as could be. I did everything I wanted to do. And it was not kind of a down and out kind of testimony.
Yeah.
And, I was raised in Erie, Pennsylvania, actually. Catholic family. My parents were actually from Italy. Hmm. My mother was spiritual and in a lot of ways. When I was a kid, I didn't really care. So I couldn't tell you the details. My father was not. He was a drinker and really not involved in anything we were doing, and just kind of he was there physically, mm-hmm. and that was about it. And most of the time, he was always more of a hindrance than a help.
Mm.
It was never a help.
Yeah.
So I knew from an early age that whatever I was going to do in my life, I had to do myself.
Mm.
So I became very independent.
Your parents were both Italian?
Yes.
Okay. Now, which meant you're all Catholic, at least on the book.
Yeah.
On the books,
sure.
they were baptized Catholic.
Oh, yeah.
Did you go to church and all that when you were?
Most Sundays.
You did?
I got baptized in this little Italian church in Erie, and we went there because the priest spoke Italian.
Okay.
And my parents spoke, my mother spoke horrible English, my father spoke pretty good English, but my godparents didn't speak any English.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I got baptized in this little church and Erie, where it was a predominantly Italian parish, and they had a priest who actually was from Italy.
Wow.
And so my parents felt very comfortable there. But of course, it was a thing of cultural more than it was spiritual. Mm-hmm. It was, okay, we got to baptize this baby. Okay, good. The priest did it. Okay, now let's go home, mm-hmm. kind of thing. And we went to Mass most Sundays. I would say mm-hmm. probably three quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And there was usually a fight about that because I didn't want to go. My sister didn't want to go. My mother kind of made us go here and there. And my father didn't care whether he went or not. So, and that's going to translate into the rest of my testimony. But so that's how I was grown, how I grew up. So, of course, I did First Communion. I did confirmation. I did all that stuff. And then we rarely went to what we used to call catechism, mm-hmm. which is now PSR. We went just long enough to do whatever the upcoming sacrament was.
Yeah.
A year before First Communion, I think a year before confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the days where, we had the nuns with the
full habits and everything.
And all you
sure.
could see was their face. And
yeah.
You always wondered what they looked like underneath. And it was kind of scary. But
if they had feet when we were little kids. I wondered if they had feet because you couldn't see them, half the time they were.
Yeah. And, they taught us a lot of stuff. I mean, they taught us the basics, and they also put horrendous fear into us. Like, if you do this, if you do that, you're going to go to hell, and if you mm-hmm. do this. And so I realized from a pretty early age I wasn't going to be good enough, so I was going to go to hell anyway.
Hmm.
So I figured I'd just put that out of my mind and worry about it when I was dying, and then maybe somebody would call a priest and I'd be okay, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I went to college, I thought I was just going to get away from it, except I had this girlfriend who is now my wife, who every Saturday evening she'd say, "When do you want to go to Mass?" And I'd say, "Never." And she'd say, no, it's either 9 or 10:30 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So we would have like a little fight and then we'd go.
Yeah.
And there was actually a couple guys from my dorm that used to go with me and we'd meet her over there and so forth. And she always made sure that I went.
Yeah.
So, you know, since I was, you know, young and in love, I went along with it like everybody else does. And so then we got married and I should say that because of my family situation, I became a very independent person. Like if somebody said they couldn't do something, I'd say, of course you can. You can do anything you want to do if you work hard, if you put your mind to it. You know, I couldn't stand people whining about what they couldn't do or they were too whatever it was. Or because I thought, you know, hey, I'm doing this. So we got married. And then after we got married, actually, I decided to go to medical school for a variety of reasons. I was in graduate school. I was working in research and decided I didn't like that. So I went to medical school. We had a baby while I was in medical school, which was, you know, a tremendous financial disaster, as you can imagine. Not to mention, you know, we were living in some, you know, $100 a month apartment and had a baby and so forth. And but I was geared to what I was doing. And, you know, while we were in our 20s and very, very early 30s, most people in our family died. And we were kind of just, you know, going to school and taking care of the kid and trying to decide what to do. And my wife was working and I was in school and then training. And so the last thing I cared about was church. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have to add a personal thing, which really had an effect on me because I never said prayers. I mean, you know, I knew the prayers I memorized when I was 5, and I thought that's what praying was. You said the memorized thing, and God was going to give you some points for that, or say, oh, good, thanks for repeating that back again, you know, that kind of thing. And I can make light of it now, but at the time, I didn't understand, you know, I thought that was doing good, doing, you know, the usual 3 prayers. Mm-hmm. And when I was a third-year medical student, one of the rotations, of course, was pediatrics. And so my first day on the pediatric rotation, the first patient they assigned to me was a 2-year-old girl who had a very malignant cancer in one of her eyes. And they took the eye out and put a prosthesis in. And then shortly after, the cancer reoccurred in the other eye.
Oh.
So the next day, they were going to take her other eye out. Now, if you can imagine that. I mean, those of you, even if you've never had kids, you can imagine what a horrible situation this was.
Yeah.
This was back in like 1976. And I went into the room to do, you know, sort of the medical stuff. And here was this little girl playing with her toys. And I knew that the next day she was going to be blind. And the parents were sitting there, you know, looking like they had just gotten hit with a 2x4. And I had to leave the room to pull myself together. So I excused myself. I came back, I did the thing, then I went back to the on-call room and I said a prayer, first time ever. And I prayed, listen, God, if you get your kicks out of blinding 2-year-olds, if you get your kicks out of making these people suffer and be miserable, and this girl, if she survives, is going to be blind, but most likely is going to die anyway, I don't want anything to do with you. And I want you to leave me alone. I want you to leave my kids alone. Just you go over there and do your thing. I'll go over here and do my thing. And that was my prayer. So he left me alone for 20 years.
Wow.
Because I had asked him to.
Yeah.
So during that time, every week, I was being more or less forced to go to church. And so my wife would say, we're going. You know, she was doing, I don't know, all kind of stuff at the church, teaching PSR. You know, I used to call her my very Catholic wife because she was doing all these things. And I used to say, you're such a sap for doing that. Those people are just going to take advantage of you. They're going to make you do all the work that they don't want to do.
You started becoming cynical.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I always was. And I really thought, well, I'm going to hell anyway. Because I said, you know, I can't. There's no way I can undo. There's no way I can do enough good to go to heaven. Which, of course, is true. But, you know, at the time, I didn't understand that.
You didn't understand
that.
What that meant,
So I used to tell her she was a sap. Then I used to say, listen, I don't want to spend an hour with those losers and those hypocrites, and they're all weaklings. I thought if you went to church, you were a weakling because you couldn't handle your problems. And if you just tough stuff out and suffer along and do whatever you have to do, that's what life was all about. And I was happy doing that. I mean, I wasn't unhappy.
Yeah.
And she'd say, no, we're going, we're going, and the kids have to see you go. And I'd say, fine. And so Sundays were my least favorite day of the week. Because then I'd go, you know, 95% of the time. And then when I'd leave, I'd say, thanks for having me waste an hour with those people and this nonsense. And I just want to be left alone. And I used to say, we're leaving after communion. And she'd say, no, we're not. And I'd say, fine. And of course, you know, the husband and the father are, you know, spiritual head of the home. So my spiritual training to my kids was, listen, just go so she stays off my back. Once you're 18, you don't have to go anymore.
Mm.
So they said, great. So my son, who's now 35, doesn't go anymore.
Yeah.
My daughter, who's 28, goes, you know, I think most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if you have one parent saying you have to go and one parent saying, yeah, you don't have to go, who are you going to listen to?
Yeah.
You know, so, but obviously my wife was praying and doing. And so we probably went on 20 years that way.
Mm.
But see, I was busy. I was starting a career. I was working. You know, I had a demanding job, had a lot of pressure on me.
Yeah.
In those days, you know, the salaries were good. I mean, now it's, you know, probably, you know, we're making as much money now as we were in like 1987.
Yeah.
But in those days, it was great because we went on great trips. We, you know, did whatever we wanted to do, and I was happy.
Yeah. If you're just tuning into the program, we're here with Dr. Phil Giuliotti talking about his testimony, his story. I just have a couple of minutes left in today's show, Dr. Phil. Now, during those 20 years, you made that decision early on, and you told that story with that two-year-old child. God, you go do your thing. I'm going to go do my thing.
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't any real connect. You can't remember any time in those 20 years where you felt like you were connecting with God in some way?
No, never. I never prayed. I can't say that I ever had any kind of thought about it, except, you know, there's always a still small voice.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a still small voice. And I remember several occasions where I heard a small voice saying, someday you'll be judged for this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like the sort of the average person. I said, well, I never killed anybody. And
yeah.
I never did all this horrible stuff. I never robbed a store. You know, I didn't, I didn't womanize. I did, like most people, I was like, I don't do any of that stuff. So, you know, but I heard a little voice about how I'm going to be judged. And then I would put it out of my mind because I thought, well, you know, I'm 25, I'm 30, I'm 35, I'm 40. It's going to be a long time till I die. So, you know, I'll worry about it then.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how my life went on for about 20 years.
Yeah, great. Well, look, can you join us again tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so.
We'll continue the story. I know there's a lot more to the story, and it's an amazing journey that the Lord has had you and Joan on.
Uh-huh.
And I think hopefully we'll get, by the end of this week, I'd like to have you all week, if that's okay. Right. Join us and to be able to share some of the amazing things that God has done in your life.
Sure,
and
I'd be
happy
to.
Used you and how really you came to discover who Christ is and the beauty and the gift of the church and being a son and daughter of God. So God bless you, brothers and sisters. Have a wonderful day. Open your hearts today to all that the Lord has in store for you. God bless. See you tomorrow.
This has been Fire on the Earth. It's heard here Monday through Friday at this time. Our host has been Peter Herbeck, Vice President of Missions at Renewal Ministries. You can contact Peter or listen again to this program on the web at renewalministries.net. Fire on the Earth is brought to you by Ave Maria Radio.
Friends, I'm delighted to be able to offer you my new booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? At the heart of the new evangelization is a fresh proclamation of the gospel. But for many people, even many Catholics, they wonder, what is the message? What exactly is at the heart of that proclamation? In this simple booklet, The New Evangelization, What's Our Message? I take a look at and present in a very specific and simple way what is the core of what we're called to proclaim in this great and important missionary moment in the history of the church. If you'd like a free copy, call 1-800-282-4789. That's 1-800-282-4789.